Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
The one thing about Salah, he's got a very strong sense of his own status and his own ability. It's not arrogance. He knows how good he is.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Settle in.
On Off The Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
Indeed, you are welcome back to Settle In, which is brought to you by Guinness 0.0. And I'm delighted to say that Karen Dugan and Mabel Doherty are here with us in studio. They are of the Lagan Dragons fame, which, folks, first of all, thank you very much for coming in to us. Has to be the greatest name for a sports team on the island of Ireland anywhere, the Lagan Dragons, with this beautiful crest for the team that you row for and a brilliant organisation, which we'll get into. First and foremost, Karen, you might just start us off by talking us through your first introduction to Lagan Dragons when you realised that this brilliant thing exists on your doorstep.
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Could I just say we never use the rowing word?
Yeah, sorry. paddling.
But we've all done it. And I promise to fine anyone who actually says the word rowing instead of paddling.
Send me all the details. I will wire you a donation at some stage.
I was first diagnosed with breast cancer in April 2017, and it was a bit of a torrid time. I went through chemotherapy, radiotherapy. I had a pulmonary embolism. I ended up with a fractured vertebrae. And it was all just a bit of rubbish time, to be perfectly honest. And one of my friends, she had mentioned to me about the Dragon Boating Club that was in Belfast. And I think it had only been going a couple of years at that point, because the club actually started in 2015. And she said to me, did I fancy having a go at it? So I got in contact with the woman that was running the club at the time, and she came back to me and she said, well, I think your medical condition at the moment, having had a pulmonary embolism, is such that we probably couldn't take you just yet. And I thought, I'm not sure if it's really for me anyway. So I sort of sat on it and didn't do anything about it. And then around about 2019, 2020, there was a TV programme that was put on in the north of Ireland on BBC, which was called, what was it? Was it Spotlight or something?
It was just a documentary.
Just a documentary about the Lagan Dragons. And my husband recorded it, and I watched it, and he said, you should give it a try, you know. And it was just so uplifting, seeing these women competing in Florence who'd been through what I'd been through, and they were competing, they were positive, they were all sorts of ages. And I thought, I maybe give it a go. So I went along in January 2020, and it was before COVID. And I got in the boat and I thought, oh, someone's going to tell me what to do. They're going to show me how to dragon boat. No, they did not. It was just copy the person in front of you. And I thought, this is horrible. This is awful. I hate it. I couldn't do anything for more than about 5 seconds before I had to stop and take a breath. And all the girls were chatting away, and they were chatting away to me. And I'm thinking, how can they do this and talk at the same time? It's not possible. So I carried on. I thought, no, I'm going to keep going. And then COVID happened. So we had to completely step away from doing dragon boating for many, many months. But then we were allowed to have a few sessions later on in the year where we were able to sit in the same boat as a little pod of us. So we couldn't mix very freely, but if we stayed with our own people and we were sort of sitting in alternative seats, then we met the COVID restrictions for sports outside. And then I realised I'm getting quite hooked on this. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. That's how it started.
Is there familiar tones in that story for you, Mabel?
There is, actually, but I want to just add that Karen is now the captain.
Yes.
Yeah, so, my sins, yeah.
He's the leader for somebody that didn't like it.
Yeah. Quite the turnaround.
Yeah, no, I'd have kind of familiar scenario of breast cancer and all of that, and chemo, and so I joined in 21, I think. Mm-hmm. I was after COVID. And I see it more in terms of, for me personally, I suppose it's more of a social thing. So I do the social paddles mostly, but I do race as well. So just to give a shout out to the other dragon boats in Ireland, we meet them in places like Athy, Carlow, Loughrinne.
Yep.
And just in Dublin, you have two boats. You've got Plurabels and the Vikings. So there is a great community. And then obviously we go abroad as well, and we meet with French dragon boat people, and we've been
Italian,
yeah,
Spanish.
World, it's a world sport.
Yeah.
So, but we're part of the Irish Dragon Boat Association.
Yeah.
And it is very good for the soul. It's very good for the mind. And meeting people in the same boat. We also have people who don't have breast cancer in our club. So our ethos is all around breast cancer, but we have some supporters with us as well. So we are open to other people.
Right.
Yeah, so that makes it sort of not all breast cancer. Mm.
Of course. Mm. It is interesting that you've both mentioned the COVID time as kind of the entrance point for both of you. Well, it was right after you get involved in the club. I guess that also gives people a sense of, geez, I really need my community back. I really want to be doing something in a communal sense once again, which I presume strengthens the team to a degree.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's 100 members in our club.
Right.
So
it's just been a massive growth over the last 5 years?
It has been, right. Yes. Uh-huh. So we can take 20 in a boat. So we tend to have at the weekend, we have two boats out. And we can take another boat out if we need to. So it depends on helms. We have to have a helm and a coach on the boat.
Yeah.
And the paddlers then. And then we also, when we're racing, we have a drummer. So that keeps us in time.
Yes. So it's 20 in a boat, 10 rows.
Two people in each on each bench, on each seat.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the drummer, and then we have the helms person, or the steer. Uh-huh. So they're the one that keeps us on a straight track.
Yes.
And they have this very heavy oar that they have to control to keep us straight or to help us turn. So it's quite a tricky job.
Yes.
But you need pretty good balance to be able to do it.
And they train.
They're all trained.
They have to do a particular qualification to do that.
So. But the community aspect is absolutely amazing. I got my breast cancer came back in October 2020, and I was in a really bad place. But it was just a local recurrence. But everybody rallied round, and you know, I felt I was with a very safe, embracing environment. Even people that hadn't had breast cancer, we were really, really supportive. And we, you know, I think we've got each other's backs and we're really supportive. And now I've actually got breast cancer again and I'm living with the disease. And the love and warmth and caring nature of all these women has totally uplifted me and has helped me remain positive. And there's nothing better, although people would argue about their sports or their hobbies, is that you get out and you're on the River Laggan in Belfast and you're with 19 other women and the coach and the steer, and your mind just goes and you're just focusing on being on the river, keeping in time, occasional chat if the coach allows us to chat. and it just is so good for your head and your mental health, and being in nature seeing the kingfishers, seeing the swans. We've got two resident swans. We call them Gwendolyn and Theodore, and they live on our site, and they just potter up and down. They had babies 2 years ago. So we're amongst nature as well, which is so, it's so uplifting. We've got a seal that pops up. So it's about being with all these women, being with people that understand your story and where you are, going through a similar journey. We've got people who are just happy to do little social paddles on a Monday morning, and others who want to compete and win medals. So we try and accommodate any sort of physical ability, any sort of determination, any competitive spirit. And there are women who've actually found this very much a lifeline for them. And other women have said to us, they never realised how competitive they were until they got in one of those boats. It brings out an inner, inner strength.
Would that be your experience as well?
Once you're in a race, you become very competitive. Yeah.
They're horrible.
I wouldn't have been competitive at all. And then,
had you played sport before or competed in?
I always played sport, but never good at it.
But then this brought out something new. Dragon boating brought out a new level of competitiveness.
Yes.
But we're all friends.
Yeah.
We compete against our friends down here called the Plurabels. They're a purely breast cancer team. And they come up and socialise with us. And, you know, they're welcome to paddle with us anytime. They've invited us down there to paddle. And, you know, we all get on so well. And we've all got this same ethos and same feeling of belonging to this dragon boat community and this breast cancer community. But when we're on the river, you want to beat them. And they want to beat us. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're still great friends and great mates with them all, but we're competitive.
Yeah, and
you know, we don't lag about.
It's a non-contact sport, so you can you can absolutely go hammer and tongs at it without actually doing any damage to your opponent.
That's or yourself. Not much, you know. It's safe enough. It's not like Gaelic or anything. I did play a bit of Gaelic, and safe.
Yeah. Obviously, you both have a shared experience, as all of your teammates, or the majority of your teammates, do as well. But your stories are all very different. And I'm keen to just kind of tell both of your stories individually here. Karen, you mentioned, first of all, your first diagnosis was 2017, was it?
Yeah, April 2017. Yeah, I found I didn't feel ill. I wasn't unwell. And I was just mindlessly just sort of feeling under my armpit when I was lying in bed. And I thought, blimey, that's a lump. And I started looking at Google, which is like what you shouldn't do, because it scares the living daylights out of you. And I went to the doctors and they did a blood test and they said, oh, your blood test is fine. I thought, oh, brilliant. And they said, we'll refer you to the hospital for an ultrasound. But I thought that the blood test being fine meant that I was okay. But what I found out later was that they were just looking at the blood test to see whether I had an infection in my lymph nodes. I didn't realise that they couldn't actually tell from my blood test whether I had cancer or not. So I had the ultrasound and they did a biopsy, and that's when they found that I'd got stage 3 breast cancer, which was absolutely devastating. They said that I would have to go through chemotherapy, so I was terrified of losing my hair because, you know, I loved having, I had blonde hair and I got it cut every 8 weeks and it was like my crowning glory, and I knew I was going to lose it. So I went through, I had partial surgery, so I didn't have the full mastectomy or anything like that. I had a lumpectomy. They took out my lymph nodes in my armpit and found that 6 out of 11 were had cancer in them. So then they had to give me chemotherapy because they were worried it would come back if I didn't have chemotherapy. So I went through about 6 months of chemotherapy. My toenails went black. The skin on the bottom of my feet was peeling off. I felt sick. You go on steroids and then you can't sleep because you're wired up, and then your blood cells start getting affected, and I had to inject myself with white blood cells because my white blood cells were dangerously low. It was a pretty torrid time, and then there was one time I was on a particular drug within the regime, and I stood up out of bed and I passed out and knocked myself out, ended up in A&E. And then another week or so after that, I got spots on my chest, and my chest started feeling really tight and uncomfortable. And I didn't want to ring the helpline. I thought, oh, it'll go. But my husband made me ring the helpline, the chemo helpline. They said, go to A&E. And I went to A&E, and they diagnosed me with a pulmonary embolism, which had come from the chemotherapy. So I had to go on blood thinners. My oncologist said, God, you were really lucky, Karen, because that could have travelled up to your brain. And she kept saying, you're so lucky. But to be honest, I just tried to get through all of this treatment and just stay positive and just get on with it. Finished the chemo. Then I went on to a radiotherapy trial where they were looking for people in my situation to have slightly higher dose of radiotherapy, but over a shorter window of time. So I went through that. So I was having 5 days of five days of radiotherapy rather than the full 3 weeks. So once I had that, happy days, I was done and dusted for that particular diagnosis. Felt really weird. I felt really strange and vulnerable and alone for a long time after that, until I started to join the Dragons. And then it came back in October 2020. I felt discomfort in my armpit again, and I felt fine. And I thought, oh, this might just be a bit of scar tissue. Went to the hospital, they did a biopsy, and they said, sorry, but we found cancer cells. So had to have further surgery, went through further radiotherapy, and then it was all gone. And I was happy because I thought, right, that's it. Second time, I'm never going to get it again. And then it came back in, I was diagnosed in November last year, having just had a routine blood test. Because I'm on blood thinners, they want to check that my kidneys aren't being impacted by the blood thinners. So I had to have a blood test every 6 months. And my blood test was fine in May. And then I had another blood test in September. And the doctor rang me and said, your liver results are really, really high. We're worried because of your history. So I cut a long story short, went for an ultrasound, went for a CT scan. And they found that the cancer had come back into my liver. It's in my liver, it's in my lungs, it's in the lymph node. They thought it was in my bones as well, but it turned out that that was just slight legacy damage from radiotherapy on that side of my body. So I'm now getting what they call palliative care. And when they told me it was palliative care, I just thought, that's it, I'm terminal. I'm going to be, you know, I've got a year to live or 6 months. But it's different now because they want people who are in this situation of stage four, and I'm incurable. I mean, it's incurable cancer. I'm going through palliative care, but the breast cancer community almost want it to be treated as a chronic illness rather than something that is a terminal illness. So like anyone with a chronic illness, you just get treatment and it's just managed. So I get injections once a month in my bottom, one in each bum, one in each buttock, and then I'm on daily tablets. And that will be me now until such time as the treatment stops working or the disease progresses, and then they'll look to give me some other type of treatment. So that's where I am. It was a huge shock, very frightening. My family and friends were probably more devastated about me telling them than I was about being told I had it, because I always suspected that it would come back and get me one day, because I'd had two. Twice I'd, you know, dodged the bullet. But the third time, I just thought, I'm not going to dodge the bullet again. And lo and behold, it came back. But I'm staying positive. I've got the Lag and Dragons. They keep me sane as I can possibly be. You know, I swim. I'm doing the couch to 5K. And I'm just loving life. I'm not going to let this nail me. And I'm not going to let it define who I am.
And is the day-to-day or the week-to-week in terms of your medication, is that manageable at the moment?
Yeah.
Are there ups and downs?
Yeah. I mean, physically, I feel very well.
Great.
I'm still able to do the things I have been doing. One of the side effects that they warned me about at the beginning is a very common side effect. I don't know whether I can describe what it is. It's diarrhea. But I haven't had any of that.
Right.
So I'm really lucky. I haven't had any side effects whatsoever. And it's manageable. I take my tablets twice a day, 9 in the morning, 9 in the evening. Go once a month to have a chat with the oncologist, tell him how I am, tell him about anything that I'm worried about, and then they give me the injections. And it's all manageable. So fingers crossed, it will stay like that for a long time. Funny enough, one of the girls in one of the other Dragon Boat clubs, she knows about my story, and she is very similar to me in terms of having incurable stage 4 breast cancer. And she said that when she was diagnosed with the incurable condition, she didn't think she'd make Christmas that year. But 7 years later, she's still going strong and has got no issues. So there are people out there that are still going, and I intend to be one of them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that story with us. I know it's obviously not the most comfortable thing to tell it with such a great sense of humour as well is really remarkable. And we feel such a sense of privilege that you would share that with us. And Mabel, insofar as you're comfortable in sharing your own story, it would be great to hear your own story before we connect them via the Lag and Dragons in just a moment.
Yeah, well, my story with the cancer is similar, but I was grade 3, stage 3, quite aggressive. And to be honest with you, you just hope every day for the best. So you don't take anything for granted. You just hope for the best. So there's many people who never go on to have stage 4. So, you know, it's all a bit of a lottery, to be honest. When you're diagnosed, some people actually are diagnosed very early on. And that's the thing about breast cancer. People think it's all the same, but it's very different. So you've got stage 1, which is stage 0, where there's just a little bit of cell changes. And then you've got stage 1, 2, 3, and 4. So it depends really where you're at, how much treatment you need. And they're moving away from chemotherapy now and going towards more radiotherapy and management with medication as well. So there's a lot of good stuff happening. It's probably breast cancer is one of the best.
Yeah, one of the best understood cancers.
Understood and well researched. And the good news about it is that, you know, the treatments are coming, you know, changing and modified, and there's lots of research. I'm on a trial myself. So I don't know whether I'm the guinea pig, whether I'm getting the drug, or whether it's a placebo.
Okay.
So it is a 5-year trial, and you never know. So I just take a tablet every day, but I don't know whether it's got aspirin in it, it's an aspirin trial, or whether it's just a placebo. So it's a massive study.
Right. And is there other medication happening at the same time?
Yes. There's it's called adjunctive therapy, which is anastrozole. So, and it has side effects of joint issues.
Right.
You know.
I presume that's a conversation that you have about whether or not you want to be involved in the trial.
Yeah,
It's not something that everybody does, or is it?
I think what happens is, you know, you sort of, lots of people are asked, and it's up to you to take it on or not. So I'm from a nursing background, so I thought, right, yeah.
And have you had to go through chemo as well and go through the radiotherapy for a good
I had a mastectomy and reconstruction at the same time. So it was an 8-hour surgery, massive surgery. And but I'm kind of glad, you know, because when I go swimming or, you know, I don't have to worry about having a prosthesis or anything. And I was lucky to, because I was in COVID.
Yeah.
When I had my diagnosis and everything, so I was born. It was the first reconstruction done after COVID.
Right.
So I was lucky enough to have that and be offered that, because during COVID, most people didn't have that opportunity.
Okay. Would I be right in saying then that after your treatment and while you're still ongoing treatment, you're... The time between that and getting into the Dragon Boat is actually quite short. The Lag and Dragons appears in your life pretty quickly after
it
that?
It did, actually, yeah. Generally speaking, what we try to do is tell people to be out of treatment for 6 months.
Okay.
Because the water, the river can be a bit dirty. It's not the cleanest place.
You don't want to be vulnerable going in there.
You'd have rats and various things. So we're quite, you know, we'd sanitise our hands and things like that after we come off the river. But, you just have to be aware of infection.
And were you aware of the Lagan Dragons before your treatment or anything like
I
that?
I saw them on the river, but I didn't really know much about it. It was really a joint. I was at an Action Cancer weekend. That's how I found out about it. And I have a friend who was in it, and I just gave it a go. And to be honest with you, initially I thought, I'm not sure, because my timing was really bad. I realised I'm really out of time. Anyway, you just work on it and
of course.
Get on with it, yeah.
Because you talk about playing Gaelic football before,
yeah.
And there is sort of this construct around sport everywhere, really, that there's the traditional sports that, you know, whether it's like getting into walking and running, maybe playing a ball sport.
Yeah.
To get involved in paddling, a brutal sport. Anybody who gets into it and has to go through the erg or actually in the water. Yeah. Puts
oh,
themselves
you know
the
about
ringer.
The erg.
Even just watching the erg on YouTube with the paddling thing that they had on it, it looked pretty brutal. So to go straight into that, I do wonder, was that also a curious thing that you had to deal with, to be like, God, can I not pick an easier sport here, given I'm on the way back to full health?
Yeah. I think that's where the social thing, it's more than exercise.
Yes.
We do actually offer gym training as well, twice a week. So there's a lot happening. We have kind of got a movement coach as well. So there's an opportunity. It's kind of like yoga or Pilates. At the minute, we're having that. And then the gym, I do that once a week. So it's not only on the water.
Yeah. You're saying about it being brutal. There's a technique to it. And one of the things that that's drummed into us is to stay in time. You have to stay in time. All of the paddlers have to stay in time, because if you don't, the boat rocks. You're pretty stable. You're not going to fall out unless something disastrous happens. But also, if you're not in time, then you're slower. So the important thing is to get it all in time. But it builds up your ability to do it, and the strength builds up over time. We have all age ranges in our club. We have younger people,
probably
older people.
30 to 80s.
Yeah.
50 years of an age range.
Yeah.
Right.
And you get in the boat, and we don't expect people to do it straight away or to be able to be strong straight away. We have training sessions during the summer. We have training in the evenings twice a week. We have training at the weekends. We have technical paddles if people want to build on their technique or know how to do it without being in the training boat. We have coaches who would sit with individuals and show them how to do the technique on a one-to-one basis in the boat, with it just being tethered to the jetty. So we're very aware that not everyone will have the strength or the ability. And we have a paddle academy. We're going to be trying to recruit. We're aiming to recruit more breast cancer survivors or people with breast cancer this year. And we'll be holding some sort of paddle academy during the year to try and bring everybody who wants to join us. And we're prioritising breast cancer at the moment. We want to be able to put people through a sort of a proper programme to take them from, you know, no knowledge through to being able to at least keep in time and be technically correct. And then you can move into the training boat if you wish. And you can move on to regattas. I mean, I never thought when I first started, I couldn't breathe and I couldn't speak at the same time as paddling, and I had to stop after about 30 seconds, that I've competed with Mabel and other women in 200 metre races that takes a minute and a half, and it's full pelt, 500 metre races.
Yeah, we're going to, as well.
Yeah, we're going to Berlin in July, and we've entered a 200 metre race for breast cancer survivors, a 500 metre race, and a regular 200 metre race, and 1,000 metres. And we've got people wanting to sign up and compete in all of those races. And these are people that maybe had never done sport before, but have come along with us and have improved and have learnt. And we're such a friendly club. I like to think we're friendly. I mean, we definitely make everybody welcome. That you don't feel stupid. You don't feel silly. You don't feel rubbish. We can turn anyone basically into a into an athlete. And that's what we're called. We're called athletes when we go abroad and when we go into regattas.
Absolutely. And the other thing as well, which is worth mentioning, coming from the position of somebody who's going through breast cancer, is the fact that repetitive movement is actually very good for you.
It is. I have lymphedema. And lymphedema is a condition where, in my case, I've had lymph nodes removed from my armpit. So that means the lymph fluid can't drain, hasn't got anywhere to go to. So I have to wear compression garments on my arm 24/7. And with the dragon boating, it helps to keep the lymph fluid moving. And in fact, that's one of the early reasons why dragon boating was so attractive to breast cancer survivors, because the guy who realised that it could be helpful to people with breast cancer, Don McKenzie, back in 96 in Canada, he wanted to do something for breast cancer survivors, but there'd been this sort of thinking that exercise could actually create more problems with lymphedema. And he proved it wrong by allowing people with breast cancer to do dragon boating. And it actually helped people so much. Didn't create the lymphedema. It can actually help the lymphedema, but it helps your mental health as well as your physical health.
He was a physio.
Yeah. So it's really beneficial to people like me who've had lymphedema, because it helps to stop the swelling. It's not brilliant, my arm. It's not perfect. But it would be probably a hell of a lot worse if I didn't exercise it and keep it moving. Yeah. Swimming helps as well.
Does it?
Just
right?
Wanted to mention that, yeah.
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 It's so interesting, because like I asked that question a few minutes ago, kind of tongue in cheek, about the relationship between being a breast cancer survivor and sport. So sometimes, I don't know, it goes for everybody, regardless of gender, age, anything, that sport can sometimes have a bit of an intimidation factor around it, whereas it feels what you've done is turned that on its head completely.
Yes. Absolutely. I would not want anyone to think that we are intimidating. We've got a lot of very strong women in terms of physical strength, but also emotional strength and mental strength. Mm. But you don't have to be like that in our club. We've got space for anyone who wants to come along and join us, because we're here to raise awareness of breast cancer and support people with breast cancer, whether that be directly or indirectly. So it does look a bit scary. If you watch a dragon boat race on the television or in, in China or some of these really elite teams, you think, flipping heck. But come along and give it a go and you'll realise actually, oh, this might be for me. Yeah. So hopefully it's not intimidating.
There's a few people who have come to Belfast from other countries. And we're dragon boaters in other countries.
Yeah. Right.
And have come along. So it is. And some of our dragons go, say, to Venice, and they will rock up to the local dragon boat club and they'll say, can I paddle? So we have people from America, Canada, wherever, New York, wherever, and they contact us and they say, can we join you? And so it's a sport where you can turn up anywhere in the world and you can get on a boat.
Yeah. There's a much bigger community out there than people realize.
Oh, it's huge. Uh-huh. It's absolutely huge. I mean, we went to Annecy last October, and it wasn't a serious regatta. Now, Annecy is in
France.
It's part of the Alps, isn't it, I think? And quite a few of us wanted to go, but we didn't have enough to make a whole boat. So we joined up with a club from Sligo, and we joined up and went with somebody from Cork, a bunch from Sligo, and the whole regatta was actually a festival, and it was based on the movies. So we went as the Pirates of the Green Isle.
Right.
So we all did fancy dress, and I tell you, it was brilliant. And you meet so many people from all over the world, and you have great crack. And we've had French paddlers come and paddle with us. We've paddled with them. You know, it's a wonderful community where you can just, as Mabel says, rock up, stay in touch with people from all over the world. We've got a bunch of us, 9 of us, going to Spain next month to take part in a training camp in Spain. And there are a whole load of paddlers from Ballinar going as well.
Right.
So how much how much drinking might not be done is something I can't comment on. But
they have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yep. Okay, right. So no sleep.
It's 8 to 2, I think, every day.
Yeah. So it's great community, both locally, across Ireland, across Europe, across the world. It's fabulous.
There's a question I'd like to get both of your takes on. Mabel, I might go with you first on this one. You can clearly tell that this is such an important part of your life, this community, the sports community. Do you remember the first time you felt the bug or that little sense of, geez, I really love this?
Probably when I went to down to Athy or somewhere to the race. I think that's whenever I actually wasn't fit to be put into our team. I wasn't up to scratch. So our coach Rachel said, I'll get you into a team. So I went into the Dolly Mixtures team. So there was people from Wexford, Cork, everywhere. And actually we were a disaster. But it was really good fun. I ended up getting my paddle totally wrecked.
Right.
But it's got the war wounds on it. And I look as if I'm a really good paddler.
Yeah.
Because this paddle's covered in scratches. But yeah, I think that was the first time I thought, God, this is good fun.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What an amazing feeling that must be. And what about yourself, Karen?
Well, when did I realise I was hooked?
When did you get fully addicted to the Lag and Dragons?
Oh, my Lord. When would that have been? I wouldn't have said it was the first year, 2020. It might have been something similar to Mabel actually taking part in a proper regatta.
Right.
Because we all went on a coach down from Belfast to Athy, and we had the crack on the bus, you know? Mm. And we all then got to the location, and there's all these beautiful gazebos and flags and a great buzz about the place. And I can't remember what the race was, whether it was 200 or 500, and I actually thought I was going to die because it was so tough. It was nothing like I imagined it was going to be because the training paddles were tough. But somehow when there's three boats all lined up and you've got to go for it, I thought my heart was going to explode out of my chest because it was so tough. But it's because I probably wasn't fit and I hadn't really built up to it. But it was just the regattas that you just think,
the race.
I love it, love it. And you just have, then you get back on the coach coming back and maybe you have like a wee glass of wine or something and you have a bit of a sing-song and you have a bit of laugh and it's just, you just think, flip. I got interviewed for the BBC 2 years ago and the phrase that sticks in my mind that I said and it's still true today is, I found my tribe. They are my people. They are the people I feel I belong to. And I can't say why. It's not just breast cancer. But it's just, we're all, I don't know. I don't know how you would describe it, Mabel. But
I did Gaelic for Mothers year, and that was good fun. Again, great bunch of ladies. And this is a bit similar, actually, because people don't necessarily take it that seriously until we're racing, and then it is serious. So it's a whole mix of personalities, but people get on very well, which is good.
Then to bring this conversation full circle, that what you just said there about the really tough moment being in that boat, the physical exertion of it, given what you've both gone through in your own lives and the battles you've had to fight outside of the boat, does that make you a tougher competitor inside the boat?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. What I don't like are people thinking because we've had breast cancer, we're a soft touch or we've had it too easy in terms of paddling or we're not strong enough to paddle. I think that's nonsense. We give it all. Whether people join after having had breast cancer to prove something to themselves, that's entirely their personal choice. I give my all. Now I feel probably I'm slightly a bit more reticent because of my condition. But I think, you know, it drives me to be better in the boat.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with that. The breast cancer makes you probably a tougher nut.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Crack. And yeah, actually as well, it puts a lot of silly things in perspective. You're very much...
Yeah.
You know, you realise you're here and give it your best. So you don't worry about the small, not sweating the small stuff or whatever. Just a race is a race. And
Yeah. And but as well as that, I presume, like, because we have these conversations regularly with sports people, and this phrase always gets brought up, putting sport into perspective when there are real life things that actually happen around sport, and it kind of puts sport in its place.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Whereas actually, from what I'm getting here today, it's just further proof that actually sport is bloody important.
Absolutely.
Sport is like, it shouldn't be put into its place. Its perspective is actually a really important thing that keeps people going, keeps people connected, and so much more.
But it's funny because even when we're paddling or when we're together, we very rarely talk about breast cancer.
You don't? Talk about films?
We talk about everything. We talk about training. We talk about everything. We hardly ever talk about breast cancer. You might people know about my situation and they're always asking me how I am and how my treatment's going. But that's not the primary thing that people are talking about. And, you know who may have been a survivor. You may know people in the club who've never had breast cancer, but they could have breast cancer one day. And we try to be neutral in terms of how we interact with people. And there's no obligation to open up about your story. If you want to, you can. We're there to support each other. But do you know what? It's not the elephant in the room. It's really weird. We're there for dragon boating. We're there for the sport. We're there for the friendship and the social and the camaraderie.
Yeah.
Breast cancer allows us to compete in breast cancer categories in races, but we've got three girls who are trying for the Irish team to represent Ireland in Germany in July. So the thing that binds us probably is the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that's fair?
Maybe? Oh, no, it's the sport. It's very much a sporting team. Breast cancer is secondary. But it's also very good if people are, you know, they know where to go to chat if they want to. But we don't really. It's not really mentioned that much.
No. It's not taboo. It's just
they might say
people get their head showered and just get away from it.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course. And the medication has side effects. So we kind of talk about that.
Mm.
Yeah. I presume this is something that's especially like not advertised, but like if the information is given to people who are survivors of breast cancer and people who are going through treatment, because as you talk about the mental benefits, the physical, scientific benefits of this, this is something that's being pushed out there, or could we be doing more to tell people about organisations such as the Lag and Dragons?
We could be doing more.
Absolutely.
Actually, because funny enough, we're actively recruiting breast cancer, but I'm not sure that we're getting it out there.
People just don't know about it.
Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, the hospitals and the cancer charities in Belfast would know about us.
Okay.
And we, you know, we've had TV coverage. Our head coach actually won the BBC Sports Personality Unsung Hero Award for Northern Ireland. So we get a lot of coverage.
We do, yeah.
We want to try and encourage more people with breast cancer to come and join us because it is so beneficial for people who've been through breast cancer or indeed have got breast cancer. We know that it's a fantastic sport for anyone anyway, but we would like to get more messaging out there to help encourage more people to come along. And I'm sure I can't speak for the Plurabels down in Dublin, but you know they're purely breast cancer. But these places exist, and sometimes you don't know where to find out, how to find out about them. But certainly the hospitals and the charities in Belfast, they would mention us or have posters in their buildings, you know, about what we do.
Right. I dare say tonight will be the first time a lot of people will have heard about the Lag and Dragons, and they'll have been very appreciative that the two of you both came here to tell your story. I certainly am. Thank you so much for coming in and being so giving with your time and with your own experiences. Really, really appreciate it. Karen and Mabel, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for inviting us. It's been great. Thank you so much for giving us time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.